Hello, and welcome back to another edition of the Three Good Things podcast, where you guessed it, I talk about three good things. I'm Shardul, and today we have a guest for our podcast, the amazing Chris Moreno. Welcome to the podcast, Chris.
Thanks for having me, Shardul. I'm a big fan and looking forward to it.
We've been trying to find time on the calendar for quite some time, so I'm super happy that we finally got an hour together where we can both drink and talk about general life.
Well, I had to make sure I made it through 2020 and survived to be able to do it, so
yeah,
really excited to be here.
Yeah, awesome. Chris is an operator and investor focused on supporting early-stage founders. Chris's focus has been on scaling businesses in the real estate and tech space for the last 10 years. Chris also mentors startup founders, spends time on diversity and inclusion, and he hosts Pitch Club, or Pitch Practice, here on Clubhouse, a weekly room where founders can pitch their startups and get real-time feedback. Chris, how's it going? How's life? What's going on with you?
Yeah, you know, I gotta say, all things considered, I'm doing pretty good. You know, I'm pretty happy. I've got an amazing wife and two little kids that I couldn't be, you know, more excited about every day when I wake up. So my whole life has changed since getting married and have kids. You know, I get up at, you know, 6 a.m. now, where I used to get up at 8:30, right? And yeah, we're my kids are now 2 and 7 months, and we moved to Atlanta. So it's a whole new adventure, man. I've lived in California my whole life, so moved to Atlanta, I'm learning the whole scene. So socially distanced, but
yeah. When did you move to ATL?
Dude, we moved out here so we actually ended up buying a house when we were out here a year ago. We were out here for the holidays. Looked at some houses, we saw it when we really liked, and we're like, huh, do we want to move to Atlanta? Yeah, I think we do. It's a space. So, we moved in the last week of February last year.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of crazy because we moved and I had to go to D.C. for a trip. I had to go back to San Francisco for a pitch for one of the funds I'm invested in called SoGal Ventures. They had a big pitch weekend in San Francisco. And I flew back out there, had to spend some time in our company as well, and then I flew back to Washington, D.C. the second week of March, and I was on Capitol Hill the day they shut down Congress, March 11th. We were in the halls of Congress. So, yeah, kind of crazy. And then moved to Atlanta and literally in the middle of lockdown. So it's been pretty wild.
Wow. So it's been about a year in Atlanta. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, just about a year.
How are you adjusting from West Coast time zones? Different, you know, maybe an apartment in San Francisco to a house. How do you like ATL versus good old San Francisco?
You know, I love it here. I think I like it a lot more. You know, people always kind of tell you things about, like, cities. They tell you things about the cities you live in. So, you know, people forewarn me about traffic and hope you like humidity. And it's funny. I'm like, you know, I grew up in Sacramento. I grew up in the Bay Area. You know, there's pros and cons to everything. So I actually really, it's really cool to actually have the seasons. I love it. I play sports and I love running. And then the winter, like, it's actually cool to have, like, some cool nights. And we've got to see snow. So I got to show my kids snow for the first time. But yeah, I'd say, you know, obviously there hasn't been as much traffic. I work from home, remote. And, I what blew my mind was how many trees are here. I couldn't believe the air was cleaner here than San Francisco and the Bay Area. And I think the other thing is just it's really diverse here, and I really like that. So the diversity is really cool. And to see art and Hollywood moving here, and the food is phenomenal. So I really can't wait till things open up again, but I'm pretty bumped on the scene here.
Yeah, I kind of had the same situation so I grew up in Arizona, and then I moved to Oregon for a few years, and Arizona, the main color you see when you're just driving around or being on the college campus is brown. Most of the trees are brown. There's very little, like, actual greenery. And then you go to Oregon where everything is green and there's snow and you can pull. Do you know what an Oregon double is?
I don't. What's What's that?
An Oregon double is similar to a California double where you could go like snowboarding or surfing in the morning and then just with like a short drive do the same thing by sunset. So I did that 30 times in Oregon, and I miss it. I miss it so much. But now I live in sunny Sani Franny, San Francisco, so it's very different. But yeah, I just wanted to jump right into it. Do you remember how we met?
I do. I mean, we still haven't met in real life, IRL, but we met on Clubhouse. I don't remember the exact room, but I know we were in rooms together. And this is back when the rooms were a lot smaller. You know, your rooms might get 10 or 15 or 20 people. I remember you jump onto Clubhouse and there was no one there.
Mm-hmm.
and it was pretty wild. Now, like, you jump in a room and there's people coming in and out and you don't know who people are. But yeah, it was kind of nuts. So I'd say, like, I just remember you being in the rooms and I remember, like, seeing three good things. And you talked about the podcast and then I listened to it. I was like, oh, this is, like, very positive. I like it. I like the positivity of it because I try to, like, surround myself with positive things and positive people and same thing, try to be nice to people. And, so I think you're very memorable from the standpoint. Also that, you know, your the way you're looking reminds me of Drake's album coming out, right? So, you know, you've got that. Your profile is definitely the Drake look for me.
Yeah, I have not had anyone else say that, but I really like it. I thought you were going to say the way I'm looking because I'm, like, right next to you on the app, so I'm, like, looking at you.
Oh,
but,
yeah, that's pretty cool, yeah. But, I just noticed that.
Yeah, now that you say that, I guess I was kind of going for the Drake vibe. I do like Drake, great artist, and, you know, maybe
wait,
I look
wait,
like him.
Great artist or greatest of all time?
Greatest of all time is a debate. I personally think, this is a hot take, I personally am a huge fan of Macklemore, and I think he's better than Drake. We're going to lose some people in the audience here to that statement, but I don't know.
I'm going to throw Beyonce up there. I love me some Beyonce.
Ooh,
and,
yep, Beyonce's great.
Pop, so.
Yeah. I thought we were going rap-wise. I mean, Eminem is technically GOAT, like... No dispute there, but if we're talking like an actual debate to be had, I would say I would put Macklemore against Drake in terms of like hit makers. I don't know. It's not a huge debate.
Yeah, Macklemore, I haven't listened to him in a little while, but yeah, I like the oldies. I'm usually a little behind kind of like on like movies and Netflix. I'm kind of the same way on music. I actually like to listen to stuff like when I can trust it and be like, oh, I like this. I can be chill to this. I don't really like listening to the new stuff and being like, oh, I hate that. I let other people tell me they hate it. It's not worth watching, you know, or listening to. So.
Yeah, and personally, like, I've met Macklemore back in, like, 2006 when he was doing, like, 100-person shows in Tempe. And he performed at the Showbox. And it was, like, a 100-person show. It was just him and Ryan Lewis. And, you know, now he's done, like, international tours, giant stadiums, etc. But he didn't even have The Heist out yet. It was just, like, Language of My World, his second album, I think. And yeah, I don't know, he just seems like a really genuine, like, normal dude, and just happened to like break out after The Heist. But yeah, we met totally just, I think, through Clubhouse, so you're not the only one to say, you know, I was a fan and now I'm a guest, so adding you to that club. But yeah, kindness and positivity is something that I started about 6 months ago as kind of my own, I guess, like, personal brand, on Clubhouse and I guess on the internet. And, that was kind of the birth of the podcast, was like everything in the world was super negative. And, every day you were looking at the news and just getting like bombarded with negativity. So I was like, let's inject some positivity so people can.
Well, thank you for that. I'm fortunate enough to not have fallen in love with you for your fandom and your stardom, but because of you being
awesome.
A person, I found out you had a podcast after I liked you, so that's good.
Awesome, appreciate it. But yeah, let's jump to our next question, which is generally, I always ask every guest, in your words, what's your story to date?
Man, what's my story? I think I'm still learning what my story is. I think I've learned that I always wanted to be like an expert and always wanted to be the best in something or make a lot of money when I was young, right? Oh, I'm going to be in the stock market, or I'm going to be an astronaut, or I'm going to be this. And what I realized is, like, it's about the journey. Like, I've always thought you get to something, you get to some end, you finish the race, you finish the job, and then you get the prize. Well, I've learned over and over, and like, from fortunately from a lot of other people who come before me, like my grandfather, right, who like did a lot of incredible stuff. I realized, like, he used to head up the California Water Resources Board. He like did a lot of the snow surveys that we do, like that NASA uses and things like that. He did those back in like the 50s, and he always talked about your legacy. He talked about like being able to enjoy something with other people and really living in that moment of the hard work, and then sharing that story again with other people and helping them to, you know, follow in your footsteps and passing the baton and the torch. So I think for me, like, my story is constantly learning. When I meet with other people, I'm actually like, I learned from, you know, Mark Cuban. First thing I do is listen. Like, just, you know, I've got a sheet of paper out. I always am taking notes. And I'm always listening to someone else. And there's so much to be learned. And even if that moment when I think I know something or think I'm an expert in something, that's when I'm like, oh shit, remind myself, hey, you know, you have so much more to learn, you know? So that's kind of the mindset that I keep. And I want to be able to, you know, I think I came from, you know, my mom was a single mom. My parents got divorced when I was real young. She worked really hard. My dad was the first person born in America, right? Mexican American. And, you know, we lived in the Bay Area. We had to move out of the Bay Area. It was too expensive. And I'll tell you, like, I've worked my whole life since I was like 8 years old. And for me, I love working. I love working with other people. I love building. And so for me, I'm just curious. And I think that's what I want to continue. I don't see myself ever necessarily retiring, but more or less always working with people. And yeah, leaving a legacy that I can be happy. You know, if I die tomorrow, that I can be happy that hopefully I changed some people's lives for the better. So.
Yeah, I totally connected that thread. I was actually just reading this article the other day about the growth mindset. And I think it was coined by Carol Dweck, I want to say. And it's the idea of basically what you just said of like, life is a never ending learning journey. And every moment you face in life, whether it's an obstacle or a success, is just part of your journey. And it's the journey, it's not the destination. And I think to the idea of like being, you know, the son of your parents and a descendant of your grandparents, something my old debate coach used to say, which is one of my favorite sayings, is that wherever you are in life, you are standing on the shoulders of the giants that came before you. And it was my debate coach, so he was talking about like previous students that went to my high school, but it kind of extrapolates to your family and the people that have helped you get to where you are. So with the podcast, it's fantastic guests like yourself or people that I've just talked to, like, how do I ask questions on a podcast and like ask people stuff, or like where do I record things, or just general life questions of like, I don't really know how to get started with investing, where do I start? And I just have to remind myself that like, there are people that have been there and done that in the world, and you can learn just by asking them questions. And ironically, that was the idea behind the podcast, was a little bit of about positivity, but also just want to have guests of learning kind of how they think, a little bit into kind of their background and what came to and how they came to where they're at. And similar to you, I have a pen and paper in front of myself as well, because I'm always taking notes. I think that those are like a couple things we have in common, is always be learning and always be taking notes. And in the words of is it Alec Baldwin, Glengarry Glen Ross, always be closing.
Yeah. ABC. Coffee's for closers, right?
Put that down. Yeah. Ironically, I don't drink coffee, so it's hot chocolate, but yes.
Ah, there totally. You go.
Yep. So coming to kind of the investor side of your life, you've run three successful startups, including Laundry Locker, Drop Locker, and the package system that I have in my apartment building, Luxor One. What are three things you've learned from growing all those three startups?
Yeah, so first off, I'd have to say it starts with the team, right? It always starts with the team. So the person who actually founded Laundry Locker, I was not the founder of Laundry Locker. Art Levy was, and I count him as an amazing friend, mentor, and boss, partner, whatever you want to call him. I've known him now over 11 years, and I was a customer. I had the lockers in my building for that first concept, which was, the lockers for dry cleaning and laundry, not even packages. And it was this tiny little company in San Francisco, and so he founded it. I joined the team, and then we created two more companies out of that. And the funny thing is like every single time it's about team, right? So for me, having great partners, having great teammates, and then knowing who to partner with, that is something I really learned about. That was, I think I learned it a couple years in more and more and more. And I've learned over time is that having people that you trust around you and people that you work with, and then, your businesses can continue to grow in these small introductions that don't seem like a big deal. They just snowball on top of each other, right? Same thing in investing, right? Small little introduction here, small introduction here can literally change your entire life, like, and change thousands of things that happen in the future for you. So I think for me, like that, I found that, Arik has definitely taught me the value of, he says no a lot. He's more of an engineer. He's very analytical. I'm much more yes. I say yes too much, but that's just how I am. And I always used to be very shy too. So for me, it's like meeting people, pushing myself to meet people, to engage with people, and then to find the best people. So when we were hiring, I remember meeting a guy at an event we were doing in San Francisco as a story. Like, his name was Cody. And I met this guy, and he worked at a restaurant. I was like, man, this guy just hustles, and he can talk to anyone. He's not afraid of anything. And then I, needed a marketing person. Like, it was just, the two of us and our team. And I was like, dude, hey, would you want to pick up some more hours? And the guy, said, yeah. And I brought him on, and he's worked with us now for 11 years in two of the companies, right? And it's just, it's so wild, the people you meet and have worked with. They just, you end up reconnecting, especially in Clubhouse. I've met back with a lot of them. So I think that's number one, is, be kind to people, because you never know if you're going to end up working together or with each other, or they're going to acquire you, or you're going to acquire them. And make sure any partner, whether it's distributors, partners, clients, that you're just really nice with them. So that's probably the first thing I'd say.
Gotcha. And kind of on that note is, when you were coming to Laundry Locker, how did you decide, this is the thing that I want to do? I want to, double down on being with this founder. I really want to grow Laundry Locker to be a bigger business. I want to go find, someone else to do the marketing side of it, have them pick up more hours, yeah. Talk to Cody. How did you know that Laundry Locker was the thing you wanted to spend your time on?
Well, I didn't. I just knew I wanted to do something different. Quite honestly, when I was thinking about, I was at Macy's Corporate, and I had gone through a couple of acquisitions, and I'd moved from LA to San Francisco. And then 2008, 2009 hit, and I was working on our, I had worked in several areas. I was a buyer at Macy's. The interesting thing is I worked on remote work for Macy's. I worked on a program actually focusing on remote teams. We were focused on pandemic as well. We hired Bain Company to look at business continuity. So if an earthquake come, if a terrorist attack, pandemics, we actually planned for all these things back in 2008, 2009, and then we rolled out nationwide a whole program trying to move all of our teams to be remote. 7,000 people out of 7 offices to move to 2 and all remote. It was crazy. And that taught me, I said, this is the future. We spent millions of dollars on this, and I was like, holy shit. The work that Bain did, I was so fortunate to learn all of that. And I said, this is it. I'm out of here. I'm out of this big company. I want to go to a small company. And so I actually interviewed, it was 2009. It was a really tough time. I'll never forget. I was interviewing with different times. And anyone who knows, if you're out of work and you're trying to interview, and man, you can't find anything. You're maybe get an interview and still no response. And you're like, gosh. All of a sudden, I got 3 offers at once. One was a large company, big retailer. It's an awesome company. I was like, wow, this is really cool. It's going to make really good money. They're giving me a good offer. second company was an airline. It was actually Virgin America out of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Offered me a great role, a little bit less, but it was close to home. And the first company was Target, just to be clear, out of Minneapolis. The third one was this tiny company I had cold called, called Laundry Locker, and met Arik and went in and tiny little company working out of this warehouse. I was like, this company is brilliant. And I said, this concept is game changing. It's software, it's hardware, and it's something I use and I could understand. It was picking up our dry cleaning out of a locker. You didn't ever have to meet the person. So literally it was scaling it, taking it to a warehouse and then bringing it back. It was kind of, you know, it's like basically Uber Eats, right? Or DoorDash for dry cleaning. And, but you didn't have to meet the person at their porch. You just put it in the locker and it was two-way pickup and delivery. And so I said, why isn't this everywhere around the world? And he's like, yeah, same here. So we kind of clicked on that. And, I will never forget this. I was taking a drug test at SFO Airport. You had to work in certain roles and to travel and to do certain things at Virgin. You had to actually, take drug tests. So I took a drug test. And I was calling, following up with Arik, and I said, you know, Arik, you know, what do you see here of the business? And, you know, I'm just deciding between a big company and going to a small company. Like, what advice do you have? He goes, I can't give you advice, but I can tell you this. I'll never work for a big company because, like, he goes, you either know you want to work for a big company or you want to work for a small company, right? The difference with a small company, you can't hide, right? Small company, it's you. So I took the risk. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew I wanted to do something different. I said, worst case scenario, if this doesn't work out, I'll give it 3 months. Doesn't work out, I can always go back to one of their jobs. I'll figure it out. And thank God I took the risk, came on board with him. It's been incredible. And we grew that business all throughout San Francisco, scaled that up, you know, on multiples. We took that business and concept from a small D2C company and then scaled it around the world. We created basically a licensable model, and we partnered with companies like Procter & Gamble and others to launch it. And we ended up taking, I think, to like 23 or 24 countries. So I was flying to like New Zealand and Europe. It was incredible. You know, it was New York, Canada. It was a blast. So, and then we created Luxor. And so Luxor was basically the same concept as using lockers, but with packages going to the lockers instead of dry cleaning. And that, who knew that would evolve into groceries and all types of other things. So it's been an amazing ride. And fortunately, we grew that business at Luxor, and that really took off even bigger. We were able to scale that across the country into apartment buildings like yours and others, and some really phenomenal relationships. And we were acquired by a phenomenal company called Asa Abloy. And Asa Abloy is the largest door locking and hardware company in the world. They really do access control for buildings, stadiums, universities, but just been a great ride, and we've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, the interviewing piece hits home all too well for me because I'm currently in the process of actively looking for a marketing job. but it's really cool going from Macy's corporate, Trump Tower, to kind of jumping out and doing your own thing. Was Luxor a natural progression after Laundry Locker, or did you sell off Laundry Locker first and then double down on kind of the packages area versus laundry?
No, so just at a high level, no, we didn't. We were, so what Arik's really good at, like managing and like planning. And so we kept running Laundry Locker as we shifted into Drop Locker. What he would do is hire people into roles to, like, you know, transition. And so we moved into Drop Locker, and that was kind of like taking what we did at Laundry Locker and then helping other people do it in other cities. Basically, it's kind of like, think about DoorDash or Uber and then taking it to other cities, right? And that's what we were doing, and helping other people do it in other cities. And so then it was a natural progression to create Luxor. But we created them all as separate companies because they were truly different businesses, right? Mm. And so Luxor, you know, we can spend hours talking about this, but keep it really short, is that Luxor was a natural progression because it was a newer tech, it was a better technology, and because the packages, you're not working with just one dry cleaner, right, delivering to lockers. you're working with like UPS, FedEx, U.S. Postal Service, you know, even local delivery companies, florists, grocery companies, DoorDash, like any of these companies can be delivering to the lockers. So you could have, you know, we went from having in a building 40 customers in a building to having 500 customers in one building, right? So we went from thousands or tens of thousands of customers to hundreds of thousands and million up, right? So that was really wild. And we're hitting some incredible milestones now that's kind of blowing my mind of how many packages are going through. So I can't share those numbers, but I can tell you it's been amazing. And I'm just excited actually to still be with the company, you know, even beyond the acquisition.
Yeah, that's interesting. So when you're kind of shifting your focus away from Laundry Locker to Drop Locker to Luxor, why not just shift the or pivot the company that you had originally started into the three different areas, especially if the vendors and the people you're talking to are different? Like, why create three different ones and then run three different companies concurrently? Did that seem like a lot for you at the time, or did that just make a lot of sense to kind of rebrand yourselves as well as your association to the company?
Well, what's good is that I'm good at certain things and not good at others. So obviously, fortunately, we had a great leader and CEO, Arik. So he was the one who kind of, you know, knew what to do, and he had some great advisors, right? So I think that's the key thing for founders, right, and for CEOs, is that you have people around you mm-hmm. that are teaching you these things. Because I wouldn't have known that at the time to do that. So a lot of these things that we did, you know, I know you asked a couple of different things, and one of the things I, you know, think about all the time is, like, I'm always constantly doing A-B testing. I'm really making mistakes, but I call it A-B testing, right? And so when you, fortunately, when you're thinking about the mistakes, you can make mistakes that aren't going to kill you. And so, like, for instance, if you try to just do it all, everything under one company, but they don't align well, then it doesn't make sense. And you're going to have a much harder time, like later on, possibly selling that company. Like Jason Calacanis talks about this a lot. We ran a call not too long ago, and he was telling a founder, he's like, you need to separate these lines of business. He's like, you're talking about this, a technology business, and you're talking about a services based. He's like, I don't even want to invest in the services based. And he goes, by the way, it lowers your valuation. So that's what we kind of, I think one of the reasons we did it, and Arik would be a better person, maybe go have him on the podcast, is that certain businesses just don't make sense. Like they're close, but they're not close enough, right? At least in that moment. So, you know, when you're trying to scale, I think that's one of the things that I learned is, like, you can make mistakes, but you can't make mistakes that are going to kill you and that are too expensive. And number two is you need to focus. And that's something else I learned from him, you know, was I love trying a lot of different things. I've got ADHD, and that's good for me because I always am hungry and want to do more, but it's bad that if you do too many things and you run out of money or you're not focused enough to where people don't even know the singular thing that you're really good at, you could go out of business. So I've learned to be really, really good at like one thing, maybe two, but then once you're good at that one thing, then you can take on something new. And then number two, I learned something that I didn't realize early on, which was like, I got to meet Brian Chesky at Airbnb and then Reid Hoffman. They were doing a little fireside chat with, like, I don't know, like 60 people, and I got to talk with them. And I'll never forget this, is that they said, what was it? They said, would you rather have 100,000 people, customers, who kind of sort of like you, or 1,000 people who absolutely love you? And for me, I thought, oh, no brainer. I want the 100,000. I don't want 1,000 people. I want 100,000. That's awesome, because I can change their minds. I can make them love me. No, it's like really hard to do. And I realized it later, right? If you have 1,000 people who absolutely love you and you engage with and have great conversations and trust, you can scale that really well. So that was really big in my life early on as we grew, is not about finding so-so partners, not about finding tons of customers who might use you once or use you for your $5 coupon or 25% off your first order. Like, find great people who absolutely love you and who are going to spread you and share you and make you go viral. And I think there's someone who you've interviewed before, I think, who have gotten to, you know, talk with a couple times, but Nick Sharma, you know, he's phenomenal.
Yep.
And, you know, with Sharma, like, he's awesome because he understands the branding, how to really make it unique, how to really engage people. So that's where I really focus on in my life, is how do I, like, first off, you know, what comes first in my life? Family. What comes, you know, used to be my work, right? When I was single, working hard, we did everything. We were working, you know, weekends, right? We play golf on the weekends and work and travel and do it all. But now it's family first, right? And then it's work, right? And relationships. And many of the people I've met, you know, over the last 10, 15 years of my career, I still count most of those people as good friends, right? We still call each other. We see how they're doing. Even when we're not working with each other, we still stay in touch. We have actually have someone starting at our company next week who left our company like 3 or 4 years ago, found a different job. We hired them back. I've got another friend starting in 3 weeks who I've worked with for 10 years at a totally different company. We've never worked together, and we're hiring them on, and I'm so excited about that. So that's what I love is like the people, the relationships. Obviously, you have to run a solid business and it has to have to be profitable, but you also have to enjoy the people you work with. And I think you have to care about them, because people can tell when you don't care about their well-being, they're not going to put in their best work. So that's really important for me, is to really get to know people and really be authentic. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier about just being kind, because for better or worse, that the world is actually a lot smaller than most people think it is. And chances are that if you are in a situation where you need a hand up, or you need someone's feedback or mentorship, you can reach out to them, even if you haven't talked to them for a few years. And people are more likely to remember the way they make you, the way you made them feel, than like a title or a project. And if you made them feel good, then they're more likely to hopefully help you out. So if it's associated with something that's positive, then you'll get that back. If it's associated with something that's negative, then you'll probably get that back, and that'll probably be more of a cold shoulder. But kind of what we were talking about a little bit earlier is you mentioned scaling the three startups to about 24 countries. How did you scale out of San Francisco? And what was kind of some of the growing pains there of just figuring out how to take, you know, Laundry Locker, Drop Locker, and Luxor worldwide?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I mean, without going too down a rabbit hole of all the details, you know, you learn over time. And I think that's the thing, is too many people, like myself included, you try to find a silver bullet. You try to find the one shortcut, the one secret. And there is no such thing as one. There's multiple ways. There's thousands of ways to go. But I think the thing I've learned is you need to have a process. You need to realize you're not going to be an overnight success. I can't tell you how many people told us, good luck with that. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that'll work. Oh, that's awesome. Good luck with that. But then, like, they didn't want to buy from you or didn't want to, you know, work with you. And so people will always tell you your idea is great. They'll always say, sure, sure. But it's like they don't want to cut the check. And so that's what I've realized, like, for sure, for me, like shipping the check, cutting the check, supporting people. And so to your question of, you know, what were some of the challenges of scaling? How do you do it? So I think first and foremost, you have to create a plan and you have to see where you're going. Because if you don't have the end game in mind and you're just kind of growing and saying, oh, we'll figure it out later, that's a challenge. You got to have a number. You have to have metrics. You have to have goals. So I have really big goals now, right? Like one of my goals is in the next 5 years, I have a goal. So by 2025, I want to be on a board of a Fortune 500 company, right? Mm. That's one of my goals. Why? Not for money. It has nothing to do with money. It's to make change. It's to enact, you know, changes within that company. It's to help them innovate, you know? And so I don't know what company that is. That's actually not as important. It's to be able to help shape the future and to scale. So that's one of the things I focused on, you know, how do we scale to more companies? How do we scale to more cities? How do we scale our business? Is I focused on scale. And so what I focused on first is how not to scale, right? Figure out the single things you need to do right. Do them yourselves. I had this call with someone this past weekend, a founder on Sunday, and he asked me about, you know, should I hire an outside sales team? And I said, well, where are you guys? Like, I'm at $2 million a year or something, or $1 million a year. I said, no, you need to do it yourself, or hire someone internally to do it. Because if you hire an outside sales team, you're not going to be able to figure out what you're doing right and wrong. You're just going to be trusting this outside team that's going to tell you everything great, or that if it doesn't work, it's your fault. And so you need to be able to document. So we did an amazing job. Like Arik, again, I'll talk back to Arik. Like, he was really solid at documenting what we did right and what we did wrong, right? And we were always, no matter how good you are at doing something, there's always room for improvement. And I think that's one, you know, we're always our hardest critic. So when we were scaling, it's like, we weren't always scaling the same rate. I remember, like, we weren't scaling when I first came on, and I had to give myself some time to, like, learn the business. I went into meetings, and I would just, like, bomb. Horrible. I remember going to, like, Yelp's headquarters, right? Not interested. Walking in there, right? And, you know, just getting turned down left and right. And when you know and you live it, you're like, no, this is going to work. This is going to be it, and this is how. And you have a plan, and you find the right people. That's what I found is there's always going to be more naysayers than there are supporters in the world, especially early on. Later, when you're successful, everyone's a supporter. Everyone wants to join. Everyone wants to invest. But early on, that's when you get all the no's. You know, that's when you meet 300 investors and 295 say no. That's when you need the support. So that's what I found with scaling is find the people who see what you want to do. Find the people who are honest with you and actually say, I really like this, but I've got a suggestion for you. Are you open to it? Yeah, I am. Well, it's going to be hard. You sure? You want the feedback? Yeah, I love that. I love people who are honest with me and ask me that question. If I do the same to them, and especially like founders I work with, they'll call me at 10 o'clock at night. They'll call me on Saturday morning. I'll connect with them. We'll jam, and I'll tell them straight up. I'll say, hey, are you open to the feedback? Yes. Okay, I'm gonna break this down. And I've had a couple people tell me, I've never had that someone tell me that before, and I actually appreciate it. That comes from the hard times and the challenges of scaling out of San Francisco, the hard times of scaling to other countries and wondering, shit, if I go to Europe or I go to New Zealand, like, am I going to be able to figure out how to do this? You know, if we go to Peru or we go to Mexico or we go somewhere, like, can I even speak the language? Is it going to work? And so when you're working with other people, that's the other thing. When you have their family and their livelihoods in your mind, I think it actually makes you stronger. I think people who don't have that in their mind can lay people off like that and not think about it. I think it actually is harder. I think it's harder to motivate. So I'm a big believer in getting people and caring about them, knowing their stories, and then knowing that you have to work hard and you have to work together because you both have this incentive to work together to make it right. You've got families you have to feed, you know. So anyways, that short and long version of saying, you know, those are the challenges of scaling to other countries, finding damn good people who can help you and damn good people who write good contracts that aren't one-sided. I think a negotiation always should be winning for both sides, right? Something I learned is, you know, if I feel like I've won negotiation and I beat someone else, that's not good. Mm-hmm. So I always try to go into a negotiation and leave a negotiation, no matter if it's a customer, a vendor, a partner, that we both are happy with the result.
Mm-hmm. Totally. You mentioned cutting the check, and this is the last question I'll ask before opening up to the audience for Q&A, is you mentioned cutting the check, and now you're kind of on the other side. So you're no longer kind of pitching Laundry Locker, Drop Locker, and Luxor to investors. Now you're actually investing yourself. So as an investor and as one of the admins of Startup Club and pitch practice here on Clubhouse, is what do you look for when you're looking to cut a check into a company or make your own investments?
Great question. So I think there's a couple things. Number one, I look to other people who I learn from. So number one, friends, even mentors or people I've connected with and taken a nugget from their, you know, teachings, whether they know it or not. So, like, a good example is, like, Alexis Ohanian, right? Mm-hmm. And the way he built Initialized but then left, right? Like, shocking, right? Wait. He left Reddit? He left Initialized and he started 776. Awesome. And he's taking a different approach now. And he's trying to, you know, flip this. So my whole thing is about flipping the script. So when other people are zigging, I want to be here, right? And when everyone else is going one direction, I want to be going the other way. I don't want to go with the herd. And so someone else who I think about is like Jason Calacanis. I've been fortunate enough to like, I went through his, you know, Angel U, I've gotten to invest with him, talked, I've been on the app. He's done the pitch room with us, which is great. So what I like is, I love how he says he cuts the check right away. So that's one of the things I try to do too, is when I make a decision, go quick, right? Mm-hmm. Sign the docs, cut the check. I'm probably going to be one of the smallest checks. If not, I'm the smallest check on many cap tables I know. But those founders have told me I've been the biggest help to them out of any investor they have. And many of the VCs who've invested, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. And so that's huge to me. Not only does it make me like feel really good that like I'm helping someone like beyond the scope of the money that I'm giving, but that I'm able to like scale myself back to what you said. That's what I think about is like, how do I always be the first to give? How do I give more than what I'm taking from someone else, right? Or getting from someone else, not taking, but, and then, so I think earlier in my life, I was about like keeping score. Oh, if I do this, am I going to get this back, right? I think sometimes we're taught that, or we think that's the way things should be. And I think that, you know, as I look at my kids and I think of my son, like he's got the toy truck and you take the truck away. Well, you have to bring a truck and share with him. And so for me, it's like, be the first to give. Don't feel like you have to keep score. Give. And so that's my whole approach here on Clubhouse with pitch practice and with like Chandra is really giving, helping, trying to be positive. And, you know, I can't always be there for everyone. I've got a day job. I've got night and weekends. I've got a family. But like really connecting with people and like trying to learn something unique and trying to like, I really try to push founders too. I'll give them 15 minutes because I'll usually see the way it goes. I think a lot of people I've noticed will get an email of a pitch and you say, okay, not interested, right? It's the easiest thing to do, or no, you don't have traction. No, you don't have this, right? It's easy to say no. But I actually go, huh, I want to dig in more. I want this person to show me what am I missing? What's really unique about this company? Because if it's just another Uber, if it's just another laundry lot, if it's just another whatever, you're right, I'm not going to be interested anyways. But I want them to show me. I'm amazed how many times people come in and show me something really cool. I love that. So, and again, I'd say that, you know, it's all about people. So like on Clubhouse, I think you'd asked me, you know, were there any investments or companies? And there's actually several. One of the people who invited me to the app was a founder I mentor and advise and invested with. Mm-hmm. You know, I met Greg Sparrow, who's a founder of WeBin. I met him actually through Clubhouse first, and then invited him and recommended him for On Deck. And then I invested and I'm an advisor to his company. I met my last investment through someone else who I met on this app, through Janine. Her name is, Janine's an investor, and Christy Cowdery over at Stagger, with phenomenal woman founder who's building an incredible company. Other people like Max over at Caribou out of Miami, like she's really awesome. So gotten to meet a lot of phenomenal people. I got to have, you know, even with like other investors. So like I've been able to have chats with like Naval and Sahil, and they motivated me to start a rolling fund, you know, focused on real estate tech. So like Clubhouse has been one of the biggest changes to my life just in the last few months, and really introduced me to a lot of incredible people who I thought I would never actually meet in person. Or, you know, and have conversations with. And we're rolling, like Justin Kahn and Andrew at Initialize. We were chatting the other night. It's kind of blown my mind. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and I think for me, it's not the investment side or my day job, but Clubhouse came at a time when even the whole world, basically the whole world, couldn't meet in person. And you were very much limited in terms of a social circle or just general people you could meet by like where you live, maybe the neighborhood you're in. And I live in San Francisco, so I don't have a car. So it's very much like the place you can go by bus. And then once COVID hit, it was very much like, okay, my social circle is basically the only the people that I know, right? The people that will hop on a Zoom with me and play games and like will stay in touch, or the people that are in my phone. But with Clubhouse, and I joined back in July, I think you might've joined earlier, I've met so many different people from across the world at a time when like you're bored of the Zooms and you're bored of the sitting on Google Meets and like the somewhat virtual kind of transactional relationships that you have. But on Clubhouse, you can have that serendipity and that ability to just meet anyone. And sometimes it's, you know, helping your bottom line in the way you make money. Other times it's just general networking for guests for your podcast, in my case, or just learning from other cool people. But with that, I'm actually going to open up the stage. So if you have a question, feel free to raise your hand and we'll bring you up to stage. We'll keep Q&A open for about 15 to 20 minutes. And
actually Brandon, by the way, because he's someone else I want to shout out. He's someone I've gotten to meet through Clubhouse as well. So I'd love to allow him to ask a question if he wants to.
Yeah. Come on up, Brandon. How's it going?
Yeah. Hey, what's up, brother? Chris, what's going on? How you guys doing tonight?
Doing great.
We're good.
How are you? Yeah. Hey, I'm fantastic. I just wanted to say thank you for this. I've listened to your podcast a few times. Hearing Chris up here is amazing. And I just, you know, great conversation. And keep it up. Keep up the great work. I guess, Chris, you know, what's been, I guess, if I were to ask a question, what's been the best angel investment that you've made to date? And what value were you able to bring to that angel investment?
Oh, that's a great question. So I might, there's a lot. So it's really hard for me to pick one because I've done quite a few. If you know, you can. I'm trying to be pretty public with them. I'm going to pick one. I'm actually going to pick a fund. So I'm going to pick a fund. I'm going to cheat. I think X Factor, I'm going to pick two. I'm going to say X Factor and SoGal Ventures. So I got introduced to X Factor. It's actually, I think it's 22 women and with Chip Hazard and Jesse Middleton. And they, from Flybridge, and they, X Factor is basically all, they make all these investments of women CEOs and founders who've been through it. And it's awesome. And they invest in companies that have at least one woman co-founder. And they are just killing it. So that's one place I've gotten to learn so much from them. The investments they see, the investments they make, they are just killing it. And so I like Aubrey Pagano over there. You've got Danielle Muriel. You've got some great founders who've just killed it. And they're just on a success route like no other. Also, I got introduced by Elizabeth Yin over at Hustle Fund, which I'm a huge fan of. They have the new Hustle Fund, flywheel. But she introduced me to SoGal Ventures and Elizabeth Galbut and Pocket Sun. And they do amazing events. That was actually the last in-person founder event I've been to, where they had a rapid fire in San Francisco earlier this year with like 60 pitches of like 90% women and underrepresented founders. It was phenomenal. That was really a standout because I got to meet so many founders there that they invested in. So we got to invest too. And then there were companies there that they didn't invest in, but I could invest alongside with them. So I really love that. And I love that about, you know, I'll say like the AngelList platform. I'm very active on there. I'm a huge fan. I've met a lot of mentors through AngelList. And I've gotten to meet a lot of people through YC and through On Deck. So it was a long-winded answer, and sorry I didn't pick one, but I can't pick one.
No, that was fantastic. And thanks so much, Brandon, for the question. If anyone else has a question, feel free to raise your hand, and we'll bring you up to stage. Welcome, Charles. You got a question?
Hi, Chris. I'm curious.
Hey,
with all your successful kind of investing, I want to know, how do you define success, and what is it that drives you?
So I think that's the thing that I didn't understand early on, and that, again, I've got a lot of mentors and others, and I think that's, life is about learning. Like, when people, I always thought, like, you could be born with success. You could be born to be Elon Musk. You could be born to be the, I really truly don't believe anyone's actually born to be. You are born in a certain environment. You're born into privilege. You're born into certain places, but it's the people around you who are going to shape you, right? Through your growing years, through this, through that. And and you have to also work at it, right? Elon Musk isn't Elon Musk because he, you know, is lazy and he just sits around all day. He freaking works crazy hours. He flies all over the place. He makes a lot of really hard decisions that people agree and disagree with. And I'll tell you, I disagree with a lot of his decisions, but I still go, wow, this guy's really doing some incredible stuff. He's now, I think, the wealthiest person in the world. But that's not my idea of success. My idea of success is not being wealthy. I used to think it was when I was a kid. So my idea of success is this. My idea of success is to be able to set goals, to achieve realistic goals, and hopefully beat them. But it's okay if I miss them. It really is. As long as I'm learning something new each time I do them and each day, and I accomplish something each day. And I think that's something it was hard for me to grapple with, because when you're building a business, you want things faster. Okay, you made $500,000. How much more do you need to retire or to be done? You know what the answer is? Any person I've ever met, it's more. If you ask someone if they've made $10 million, how much more do you make? If you made another $10 million, would be happy? Yeah, I would. When they make that extra $10 million, what happens? Now I want $40 million. So tying success to money, I found, is a horrible thing. And for me, like, I think I look at myself again. A lot of the relationships I make and a lot of the investments I make, and I also do it in real estate. I've met some great people like Keith Wasserman. I got to meet Kat Cole, who's made some great investments, and I've gotten to learn a ton from some other people like Tommy Leap at AngelList, Andreas Klinger, Eric Thornburg, all these people who have phenomenal funds. As I learned from them, is that you never stop. You're learning. You're getting to meet with these people who are building incredible businesses, and we're lucky as the investor to be along for the ride. So I don't consider myself yet like a VC, because I'm pretty small checks, but I have the privilege of being able to invest with phenomenal investors and founders who I get to learn from. And hopefully they became really successful, and it wasn't because of me, it was because of their hard work. But I have to show my value to them as well. And that's the type of people I would want to invest with me. So I want to be the same type of person to them. So hopefully that's a long way of winded way of saying I define success as learning and working with great people and being around great people, that when I die, if I were to die tomorrow, I know there would be a shit ton of people who'd show up to my funeral and would say really great things about how I hopefully impacted their lives, right? That's what I care about.
Love it. Thanks, Gary.
Yeah, kind of on that note, I remember reading this article, or maybe it was a tweet, I don't remember, that was basically like being an investor is like having a ticket to a roller coaster, but you don't know when it's going to start, and you don't know if it's going up, and you don't know if it's going down, but you're just along for the ride. And I think it was a tweet, but it makes 100% sense. I think it's the same way, even if you're not investing, but if you're just joining a group of people in any capacity, whether it's a job or cutting a check, etc. But I think we have time for one more question. If you have a question, just feel free to raise your hand, and then I'll bring you up to stage.
Yeah, I'll say this too, is like, to his point, I think I'm still learning from a lot of the investors. There's some other great people on Clubhouse, for instance, like Zach Wellis, you know, who mm-hmm. spends a lot of his time in, you know, interviewing great, you know, people. I've gotten to invest with him, gotten to invest with another person. His name's Peter Livingston, who's phenomenal. And I just read. I've learned to read a lot. And you pass on a majority of deals, right? I'm passing on like 98% of companies because I just can't invest in everything. But when you get to learn from other great people, you know, one other company I want to call out, her name is Ava. She's at this company called Simba. And they went through YC. And, you know, there are a lot of great people who are overlooked. And they're building something really cool. And I think that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for people who have incredible talent and have just not been discovered yet, or oftentimes being overlooked, that are going to fucking kill it. Excuse my French, but that's what I look for, because the same types of people that are always doing it, we need to help open the doors for others. We need to help bring people up, because if you don't help them, they never make it, right? It's really hard to make it through that glass ceiling. So that's something I'm also focused on.
100%. And paying it forward is something that I'm a huge fan of as well. And wherever you are in life and whatever platform you have, it's important to like open the door for other people and hopefully help them not have the same struggles that you did. But with that, I think we have our last question. Michael, welcome to the stage.
How do you pick the people you even listen to start with? Because there is just no shortage of people with great ideas.
Yeah, so I am still learning. What I'm doing right now is earlier on, I talked about how I'm focused on the yes. No is a great word to say when you're focusing on things. I'm not going to do this today. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do this or schedule this on my calendar for today. I'm going to push it out. That's a big difference between saying yes and no, right? I'm pushing those things out. But when it comes to like founders and people who are, you know, wanting to like create their life, right? That's where I've learned, as opposed to me, I don't need to meet for each person for an hour. What I'm going to try and do is meet for them for 15 minutes. So how do I determine it? I learned, so again, I'll jump back to a couple people who've taught me these things. So Elizabeth Yen over at Hustle, what she did, you know, and some other people taught me is go ahead and send some people, tell them to send you something clear, right? So that you can prepare. Kat Cole's another good person with this, right? So tell me what it is you're looking for. If you listen to Pitch Practice, Josh Constantine on there, Saba from Techstars, you got Ben Parr from Octane.io, you know, Nick who's on there. They'll tell you the same thing is you need to have a process. So if for me, I'm not going to just say yes, let's hop on a call before I know what your business is about. And the reason I'm not going to say yes to that call without knowing about your business or seeing a deck, or, you know, a lot of people say, I'm not going to send you a deck till I talk to you on the phone. I need to send your deck or at least know what you do so that I'm not wasting your time as well as not wasting my time, right? Because if I've already invested in a dog walking app and you're a dog walking app, you don't want me meeting with you. And I don't want to meet with you because I might learn a ton about your business or where you might think that I'm going to learn about your secret sauce just in like a half hour meeting. And then you're going to be really upset at me when you find out I invested in that competitor, right? And you're going to say, I stole your ideas and I did all this. And so that's kind of the stuff that happens. So that's why I would say that's the first thing. That's like the glaring thing of like why you need to be clear on what you do. And then make sure when you're raising capital that you're telling people why they should be an investor. So I think the tables have turned for founders is that founders used to be, you know, in a way almost begging of the VC money. And VCs had all the power. And now there's so many angels like myself and others who even have more money, right? I mean, these companies are printing millionaires every day with these IPOs. You know, thank Chamath and thank, you know, Jeff Bezos, right, for investing in all these companies. So the challenge is making sure you're finding the right people. It's okay to have a ton of meetings. You know, if you ask Sonny Mayuga, who was at Spiro Ventures, and now I used to work with him, and now he's over at Swiftly. And he'll tell you, take the meeting. Take the meeting. He'll say, take the meeting even if they're not going to invest in you. Take the meeting even if they invest in your competitor. And I get why he says that. He says that because you need to take the meeting because you never know how things are going to work out. They might have your competitor. They might end up wanting to buy you, or you might want to buy them later. It never hurts. And I'm kind of the same way. As long as we both know, and I tell you up front, hey, just so you know, and I've told founders this a lot. I've said, hey, I'm invested in this company, Alto IRA, by the way, a company I love. But Alto IRA, I'm invested in them. They do retirements, investments. Sounds like you're doing something similar. Is that okay? And founder says, yes, it's okay. They actually do something different. We don't look at it as a competitor. Okay, great, let's meet, right? Because if you're doing something like them, and I invested in them, and you're not a direct competitor, and you're cool with it, and you're going to do something disruptive like them, shit, I'm all in, probably, right? If you're creating a disruptive marketplace that's going to create billions of dollars of GMV, and you're going to take a 1 or 1.5% take of that, count me in, absolutely. So hopefully that answers your question of like, you know, how you need to make a very short, sweet, compelling case to the investor. And the investors are always going to try and say no. So your job is to push back and say, well, here's why. I looked at your portfolios. I saw you also invested in this. And the best companies who come to me and the companies I advise are companies that I can help, right? They might be a hardware company. They might be a D2C. They might be going into real estate tech. You know, they see something in me that I've done or heard about me from another founder that they say, Chris is going to bring value to my cap table. But more importantly, he's going to bring value to my company, or he's just going to be a great person I can talk to when I have a meeting tomorrow where I have to make a really hard decision and I trust his judgment. That's probably the most important thing. So hopefully that helps.
Yeah, it certainly does. It sounds like how do you really
here's how I do it.
Whittle that down and say, I'm sorry, I can't take that one on because eventually it could be turned into something.
Here's what I say. Every person has to have a standard you live by. That standard can be whatever you want it to be. It could be an impact investor, right? Maybe you're an impact investor. So Lolita Tao, if you know Lolita Tao, she looks for companies. She gets hit up by thousands and thousands, maybe even tens of thousands of companies. She has a phenomenal investor tool that her and her husband, Josh, I actually went to school with Josh in Santa Barbara. And but Lolita is phenomenal. I can't give higher praises for anyone than almost Lolita of how she's shaped my investing career and connected with me with people. So I got to give a shout out. And if you're not following her on Twitter, number one Twitter follower you can go to right now. Number two, her investor portal. If you're raising capital, send her a note, fill out her form. And here's why. She's very clear and will say to you, okay, when you're an investor, you fill out this form and it's a matching tool. So I will say I'm interested in, of 100 things, I'm invested in these 42 spaces. And you as a founder will say, this is what we do. And if we match, that's what the tool is about. And so I'll give you an example. You might say, we're raising $100,000 on a million valuation and we have no revenue. Well, any investor who says you need to have at least $10,000 in revenue isn't going to look at you, right? And so I'll give you another example. You might say we have an underrepresented founder or a female founder. And so someone who says, yeah, that's what I'm looking for, you meet that criteria. And if you don't, you know, X Factor Ventures is a great example. They only will invest in companies that have at least one female founder. And that's the way they are. And that's what's great is there's so many different companies. Another person, Bryce Roberts, right? So Bryce at IndieVC, he invests in companies and they have a specific track. So it's not for normal companies that are raising capital from VCs. He takes a little different approach, right? Still become, you know, maybe you're not going to become a multi-billion dollar company. Maybe you're going to become a tens of millions company or $100 million company. That's still good enough in his book, but not good enough for VCs. So he's got a different track where he'll say, hey, I still like your company. I think it's great. Jewel Burks, who's here in Atlanta, same thing, Colab Capital. She'd love for companies to become worth a billion, but she knows a lot of companies might only become tens of millions or hundreds of millions and have good cash flow. She's very down with that. So I think there's companies that may not be able to become 10, 50, $100 billion companies that are going the wrong direction. They're trying to go after the biggest dollars, the biggest VCs. And they're coming to me and saying, we do, you know, blockchain. Or they come to me and say, we're doing a health tech and I'm going to change the way hearts are made. Oh, by the way, we're going to Mars and putting satellites on Mars. That's just not my sector, right? That's, if you look me up, you're going to find out I'm probably not focused on those areas. There's so many other areas I'm focused on. So the spray and pray approach is, to answer your question, Michael, it's, you know, take the meeting. If there's an investor who's like, I'm interested in what you're doing, and I think I could invest. Like, here's what I'll tell people, Michael. I say, just like if they send me an email, I say, thanks, but not a good fit. But come back to me if you get some traction. Or if it has to do with real estate tech, I'm interested. I know people in the real estate space. I'm in an angel group. We have people that we invest with in the real estate space. And I know that space really well. I know hardware, I know software, I know platforms. I know, you know, On Deck and Y Combinator. Those kinds of companies I can get behind. I need to be able to vision, you know, see a vision. And for me, that'll work. So that's what I would say is know the people you're going to. Know that there's people who are great at AI. Know, like, Tommy Lee is focused on impact and climate change, right? You know that Lolita is focused on companies with revenues and underestimated founders who are going to blow it up, you know, with her community VC, her and Jesse, and they've got Cheryl and some other phenomenal people over there. That's what you want to do, is figure out when you're putting together, these are the people that I know, and you should have a reason for every person you're going after. If you're going to Turner Novak, you better know that he likes platforms and he doesn't like hardware. He likes software.
And he loves Snapchat.
Yes, he loves Snapchat, TikTok. If you're going to Austin Allred, right? He's great about education and platforms. If you're going to, you know, so really pick and choose who you're going after. Mark Andreessen, he goes across the board, right? He might invest in you because, you know, you've got something cool or unique that he sees or that he's interested in. So you'll be really surprised that a lot of people are really interested in a lot of different things. I'm invested in a company that does a lot of music stuff, and I'm invested in platforms focused on marketing and tickets and comedy. So it's about me understanding it. And about me being able to add value and saying, yes, I see this company because I understand what they're doing and I understand the founding team and why they're going to be the leaders in the space. So I'm willing to put my support behind them.
That's a fantastic question, though, Michael. And I'm going to be moving down to the audience. We're going to wrap up here. But yeah, the main takeaway from that answer is basically do your homework before you approach. And if it's... I mean, when you're looking at an investor or even looking for a co-founder, or if you're looking for a job and you're applying to a position and you're cold emailing someone or cold DMing them, do some homework. Figure out, like, if they have a portfolio, figure out where they've invested already. And people are more willing to make the ask if they realize that you've put in a little bit of the effort and a little bit of the legwork. I forget who said this, but someone that I was watching basically said, like, make it really, really easy for me to say yes, like the least amount of friction possible. I don't need to figure out, like, exactly what you want. Have a very specific ask that shows you've done your homework, and then ask for what you want. So if it's, hey, I want X because I noticed you invested in this and I want an introduction to so-and-so, then that is a lot more specific of an ask than, hey, can you invest in my company? Or do you have 20 minutes to listen to my pitch? Or if you're reaching out for a job, like, hey, I want to work at your company, like that not only shows a little bit of laziness in terms of just the approach, but also that's a reflection of kind of your own personal brand of, are you someone that's going to actually put in the legwork when you need to?
Yeah, short to the point, focused, personalize it. Man, I can't believe how many people send me an email and has no personalization whatsoever. It's too long to read. But yeah, hey, we're all learning. I mean, again, I do this on nights and weekends. So, you know, usually after the kids go down, I'm looking at emails or decks at about 8:30 or 9 p.m. And then I'm also in Clubhouse, and then, you know, the weekends, you know, I wake up early, I'm up by 6 a.m. So I'll be looking at decks on Saturday's my big day, Sunday, also a good day. So,
yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. Cause like, I was talking to Nick Sharma, who we briefly mentioned over the podcast as well. And he was like, I get tons of emails and sometimes I'm scrolling through TikTok and just going through different random content. And I'm not even like looking for stuff. I'm just like, okay, cool. Like, this is an interesting thing. I'll watch the rest of the TikTok. And I kind of like drew a link between talking to Nick and then talking to my friend Alex, who's a big TikTok photographer that has over 11 million followers on TikTok. And he knows like how to get people's attention on the platform. And he was like, for TikTok to go viral, you have to hook your viewer within the first 2 seconds. You have to have a get that's going to be like, okay, I want to watch the rest of this TikTok. I want to spend the next 15 seconds, the next 30 seconds, the next minute watching how the rest of the story plays out. And Nick was equating kind of TikTok to email, because tons of people, especially investors or even founders, for some founders, get tons of email. And if the first 2 to 5 seconds or the first 10 to 15 seconds of me skimming that email aren't going to catch my eye or immediately understand, then I'm either glossing over it or it's going straight to the trash, and at which point it just becomes part of the noise. With that, thanks so much for being on the podcast, Chris. I'm gonna quickly wrap up here.
I left a good enough impression, so hopefully I can be be invited back.
You did fantastic. I'll keep the room open for a little bit, but I'll do a quick little outro and then hit stop.
I was hoping to be number 100, but hopefully I have someone more famous.
It doesn't really matter what number anyone is. They're just numbers, so I can understand like where I'm at in terms of episodes. But but yeah, we'll see. But anyway, thanks so much for coming on the pod. This was an edition of the Three Good Things podcast. Thank you.